Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. Thank you for joining me today. You know, this is such a great show. I love having the opportunity to have these inspiring conversations with inspiring people, and I love being able to share all this great knowledge and information with you as well. If you've been listening for a while, you know that this show is all about giving you the information, the wisdom to allow you to make informed decisions in your life so you can have a roadmap that really will take you where you want to go. So thanks for joining me today for another great conversation I'm going to be having. I want to remind everyone that Progressive Radio Network now has an app which allows you to listen to the show anywhere you may be, any time of the day, and you can also, through the app, access all the archives. So it's a great app to add to your other collection of apps on your phone, so you can be listening in to all the wonderful programming on this network. So you need to go to The Progressive Radio. That's the app. When you do a search, for The Progressive Radio and install the app. It's free. And it's a great way to just stay in touch with all the great things happening on Progressive Radio Network. The Progressive Radio, that's the app. And for all people listening to this show for the first time, welcome, and please go to my website, whatwomenmustknow.com, and that's a good place to opt in because I then send these weekly shows out, and you won't have to miss any of them. You don't want to miss any of them, right? And also, my Facebook page, which is What Women Must Know, is another place where I post on a regular basis, as well as posting these wonderful interviews with people. So go to both places. Like me at Facebook, opt into my website, because you'll get some special reports when you do that. So, yeah, be good to have you on board and keep learning. So let's talk about my topic. Let's talk about your ageless soul. Let's talk about the lifelong journey toward meaning and joy. I love this topic. I love this book, and I love my author who's coming on board. We're very fortunate to have Thomas Moore with us today. We're going to be talking about his latest book, which just so happens to be called Ageless Soul, The Lifelong Journey Toward Meaning and Joy, a great topic, one of my favorite topics I want to be exploring. And for those of you who would like to know a little bit more about my guest, he is the author of Care of the Soul, the number one best-selling classic on living a soul-based life. He was a monk through his 20s, studied music composition, and then received his PhD in religious studies from Syracuse University. He taught religion and psychology for a number of years and then became a psychotherapist and writer. He has a special relationship with Ireland, where he spends as much time as he can. Thomas has a talented family. His wife, Hari Kiran, is a serious painter and creator of a program called Art and Yoga. His daughter, Ajit, is a celebrated musician and spiritual teacher. And his stepson, Abe, is an architect, expanding and deepening the meaning and application of that field. And his latest book, as we said, is Ageless Soul, The Lifelong Journey Toward Meaning and Joy. So we're going to have a great conversation, and it's my great pleasure to welcome Thomas Moore to the show. So hello, Thomas.
Hello, Cheryl.
So I'm fascinated. There are a couple of things that I have to say I really relate to you on. I never became a monk, but I did live in an ashram for a couple of years in India. Were you a monk in India?
No, I was a monk in Chicago.
Oh, where is that? Is that high on the Himalayas?
It's very close, yeah. Oh. We have very tall buildings there.
That's so interesting. So you just became, you found a group of, was it a monk, a Hindu, a Christian, a Buddhist? What kind of monk?
It was a Catholic religious order that was started in the 13th century in Italy. It's been around a long time, but very small, called Servites.
Mm-hmm. I've never heard of them.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So how long did you do that for?
I did it for 12 to 13 years, somewhere in there.
Wow. Oh, wow. That was a long
time.
When
I was very young, you know, decades ago.
Yeah. What do you think was the greatest gift you learned from that experience?
Oh, there's so many. I loved it very much. I guess well, there's so many things. The thing is, today in my life, I try to still live as a monk. So all those things that I loved then, like, for example, I really love the idea that to study and to write is to pray. And that really gives a lot of meaning to my work life, because I see that when I write and when I have to do so much study to prepare to write a book, all of that is part of my spiritual life. It's not just a job. You know, it has to do with the very meaning of what my life's all about.
Well, I have to say that's why I like doing this radio show, because this is one of the vehicles that I get to learn and feel it's enhancing my personal and spiritual journey as well because of these great conversations. It's such an education. I'm so blessed to be able to have this type of interaction with people on a one-to-one basis and have everyone listening in as we're doing it. It's great.
No, I understand that completely. And I've done radio interviews now pretty intensely for about 30 years. And I've always felt that people who do this work, like you, the work you're doing, it's really a meaningful job. I mean, it's more than a job. It really is a calling in life. And it gives so much to people. I'm just imagine all the people affected and listening to the conversations. It's a terrific thing. And it's a mistake to think of it as just a secular job, something that, you know, you put your time into. It's something that really gives meaning to you and to people who are listening to you.
It really does, you know, and it just kind of happened. It just fell into my lap. In fact, when I was asked to have a program, this was maybe 12 years ago, Gary Null, who's put this network together, you know, he like asked me three times, and I refused him twice. I said, no, I've never done it. I'm too busy. But the third time, I said, third time must be the charm. And I never did a radio show before. So it was a whole new world opening up, but it has been such a joy and such a pleasure and such a privilege to do this show. I just love doing it, and it opens up worlds to me. I mean, how else would I have a personal conversation with you, Thomas? It would be impossible otherwise. So here we are.
Wouldn't be having it, no.
Right. You're right, you know. So the other thing I just have to say, I love Ireland. I've been to Ireland a couple of times, two or three times. Mm. I understand why. Well, I don't understand necessarily why you are in love with Ireland. I'm not Irish in this lifetime anyway, although I swear to God, I feel like I've been Irish in other lifetimes. I just love Ireland. And there's something about that land that is just filled with such spirit and beauty and music and poetry and dance. And, you know, it's just a magical place.
And very intelligent, talented, and warm people.
Yes. Oh my gosh, yes, you know. Yeah, so I really resonated. I'd love to go back and just enjoy the music, you know, just any pub. And you just go in and there's great music and there's such a vibrant culture with the arts. And I guess that's been the long-standing tradition of Ireland, all their poets and musicians and dancers, you know. And the country is just so fertile, so you can see where creativity is fertile as well, you know. It's just an amazing place. Yeah, so do you have a home there?
I don't. I chose not to because I'd rather be free to go in many different places, not be in just one place. So I usually go and visit my wife's relatives. I stay with them. I've been doing that for many, many years. And so I'm part of the family, and I like that. I feel good about that way of being in the country.
So your wife... But your wife's, I mean, it sounds like you have Indian-sounding children, but maybe they've just taken on Indian names.
They have. My daughter's name before she took Ajit, which it's an Indian name. Her name was Siobhan. That's what.
Okay.
You know,
that's very
born.
Irish.
Siobhan.
Yeah.
So, yes, they both practice Kundalini Yoga and are part of that community. So they took different names at a certain point.
Okay. Well, that solves that mystery.
That solves that one, right?
Okay. Yeah. So let's talk about this new book, this new journey you've been on, The Ageless Soul. What encouraged you? What inspired you to investigate the aging and how that relates to understanding who we really are at that stage of our life, at that part of our life's journey, I should say.
Well, I think the obvious reason is that I'm 77, and I had to face aging. I still, I do every day, and throughout my career, I've written books on the topics I was working on for myself. The book is my therapy. Writing the book, I sort things out. And I like that because that means the book, at least to me, has a freshness about it because I don't write a book about something I already know. I go into the writing as though I have to work it all out and hope I can get to the end. That's how I write the book. So in this case, I really wanted to explore aging because, you have a lot of questions, a lot of challenges that come along as you get older. And I wanted to sort them through and have the time to do it and the attention. And, the fact is I didn't think it would be such a fascinating topic, but I've been talking about it now on a little book tour for a few months. And I'm just so excited. I just love talking about this topic to people everywhere I go.
So what do you find the most fascinating about the topic?
About aging, I feel I understand the word differently than it is sometimes used. I don't think of aging as growing old. I think that people who are quite young are aging, and are older have been aged more than others. Than older people. I mean, what I'm trying to say is that sometimes you can find a person in their 20s who seems to have really experienced life and has aged more than someone in their 60s and 70s. Because not everybody who gets old really has aged. So what I mean by that is that you live, you really live your life, and you have experiences. You don't hide from them. You don't excuse yourself from them. You take it all on, the good and the bad, and you reflect on it, and you become somebody. That's what I mean by aging.
So it's like opening yourself to experiences and then distilling the learnings from those experiences, which adds to our growth and our wisdom and our wider perception of who we are and why we're here and what this world is all about.
Yes, but it's even more, I think, because when you really live, when you take on those opportunities, you are changed and shaped by them. I mean, it's not just what you know. I know we often talk about the wisdom of the old person, if that really exists. But actually, I think we become somebody. Like you can't even describe what it is. And it's not just ideas or thoughts or things you've learned. It's who you have become and what kind of person you are. I think that's what aging is about. It shapes you that way. Now, you said something a few minutes ago that I thought was interesting. You said that you were given the opportunity to do a radio show, and you declined a couple of times, and then you took it. And see, that to me is really all about aging. We get these opportunities. Someone says, would you like to do this? And you might think to yourself, oh, I couldn't do that. Or I don't have the time for it. I'm already busy. I'm occupied. But if you say yes to these opportunities that appear like that, I think that's a moment of aging. It's a moment where you move into your life and you don't retreat from it.
Maybe there's a better word we can find than aging, because aging has so many connotations to it, Because what I hear you saying is...
Yes, I know, it's not the best word.
Yeah, it's like a different word we're really wanting to create, because what I hear you saying is the ability to embrace life and take chances and be curious and jump into experiences that will mold and shape who you are, and so you can discover more of who you are. I mean, you know, if I didn't say yes to that opportunity to have a radio show, I wouldn't have known that I have this ability to have these conversations, you know? And
So
every time you jump into a new experience, and the other thing that's fascinating is that we must have new experiences if we want our brain to grow, because the neuroscience says if you do the same old thing all the time, you no longer grow new, you know, connections in your brain. So you stop getting more intelligent. Which is a fascinating concept to me.
I mean, you do this over time. You have these experiences over time. So presumably, the more time you've spent at it, which means the older you are, if things are going well, then you have really become somebody because you've had all these opportunities to move forward. Or as you say, using the brain as the metaphor, that, you know, it renews itself even more because you've had the time. So there is a relationship between growing older and aging, but that's not identical. They're not the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm starting to understand here. So what are your thoughts about retirement? I mean, our culture is built around this concept of retirement. It's, you know, it's not all cultures, by the way. So I've been learning not all cultures think about retirement, have a word for retirement, or expect to, you know, head to whatever retirement means for people, green pastures, whatever, you know. But that's an interesting concept or construct that our culture has and its impact on how we live our life, I would think. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, yes. I think we need to reimagine retirement. I see it this way, that we have a life work, all of us have a life work we can do, something that really gives us a sense of meaning and purpose. And it makes us feel that life has been worth living, that we've accomplished something. Now, part of that may be the career or job that you've had. That's possible, but it may be that the career really didn't give you that meaning. Maybe you were just putting your time in and making money. And I know I've talked to people for this book who had a career, and then when they retired, they started doing something that was interesting to them. And what they did in retirement became their life work. Or that was even more significant than the career. So I think it's a mistake to think of retirement as the nothing that happens after you've finished working. Actually, I think for most of us, retirement could be now really doing the big job of our lives, you know, to really get at it, to really do something that means something to us. It doesn't have to make a lot of money. I mean, it could, but the point is that it gives a sense of meaning to our entire life.
And really, when you think about why we are here, why we even exist, it's to you know, find ways to express who we are, be creative, be of service, you know, wake up every day so we are in a place where we're growing and learning and happy to be here. I mean, obviously, I don't operate out of a retirement model. You know, it's not even a word I want to be using, because I don't really think of myself as retiring. Right. I love what I do. I have a lot of different irons in the fire, and it just keeps me growing and excited and traveling and learning and, you know, sharing with people. And it's like I never see that ending. I just see it expanding even more. And I feel really blessed to be able to have created the life that allows me to do that.
I was going to say that we are fortunate, some of us who can't even imagine retiring because we're just doing what we love to do. I feel the same way. On the other hand, I think there are a lot of people who have spent a lot of their years doing jobs that they felt they needed to do to support their families or to keep themselves together and maybe have a sense of, you know, that their life is worthwhile in doing a job. But they may look forward to retirement, to get out of that job that has been so demanding and hasn't given quite as much meaning to them as they would need or want. Now they have the opportunity to do something different. Now, some people I know just say, well, I've got nothing to do now, and they don't retire very well. But I know there are a lot of people who do find work that is really meaningful to them. I give an example in my book of a lawyer that I talked to who really loved his practice and the work he did as a lawyer. But when he retired, he began a new work in which he was helping musicians, young musicians, develop their careers. And the way he talked about that retirement career, it seemed to me that he loved that career more than he loved his life as a lawyer. And I think that's interesting the way that works. You don't have to see retirement and career as you know, one's active and the other's passive, or one's better than the other.
Especially if people use that time to get involved in whatever. You know, it's not like, oh, I hated my job, and now I'm not working, so I can just kind of relax and do the golf course every day. But, you know, I think the statistics show that people who do that don't live very long because they've lost the meaning for life.
Yeah. No, you need a purpose. You need a sense of having really accomplishing something, and you can't come to a point where suddenly you stop and say, well, I don't do anything anymore. That's like ending the whole thing. That doesn't make any sense. But I think what we have to do is think about ourselves more and say, you know, what is it that my heart wants now? What have I always wanted to do? And is there some form, some way I can satisfy that desire now that I've retired? I think there are many, many options that would be available to us if we could reimagine what retirement's about. I think for a lot of people, you can just give up the word and find a new word for it. Like, okay, I'm in my second career, or now I'm really going to make a contribution to the world. You know, there are different ways of imagining it. I think it's true, though, that as you get older, that you have a certain kind of natural spiritual outlook that maybe you didn't have before, that now you really want to have your life have some meaning, and you would like to contribute in some way. I think that's a natural feeling.
So what do you think are the biggest challenges in our culture when it comes to aging?
The very biggest one. I didn't have to hesitate to say that, did I? The very biggest one is that our society looks at almost everything as an object or as a machine. Technology and machinery, the problem with technology is not the machinery we have. It's quite wonderful in many ways. It's that we tend to look at everything in that way, like we are machines. If you look at yourself as a machine, I think we talk that way a lot and use those metaphors, then aging means we're going to fall apart. I think that's why we think of aging in such a dark light. You know, we don't really see its beauty and relevance because we are taught in a way by the society we live in to see everything mechanically. And that's why in my work, almost all my books are about the soul. I try to bring the idea of soul back into a human experience. I don't mean that in a religious belief at all, but just the fact that we have a depth and a mysterious identity, and we have humanity in us. Now, there are so many things that are important to us that are not mechanical and are not financial. And if we could bring that to the surface, I think that getting older would make a lot more sense.
Do you think that evolves, you know, as we get older, that something happens, something shifts in us that allows us to have that perspective or tap into a greater purpose and meaning than when we're younger?
Yes, I do. I think part of it is that, you know, it's really simple. Part of it is that, well, okay, now time's going and you realize that you've spent more than half your life, maybe, possibly. No, and what have you accomplished? You know, people think that way. And I think that that assessment of your life is part of it. That's an interesting thing, you know, when you assess who you have been and what you've done. That can change your attitude. You can then look around as you get older. You see younger people going through all the struggles of life, and you see what's happening in the culture being more and more of a challenge for younger people. It makes you think more deeply, it seems to me, about things. Or it may. Maybe it doesn't automatically, but it can. And I think there's that. That's what I mean by kind of a natural broadening of your outlook, a sense of transcending, of and wanting to care for and make a contribution. Those are very, very important emotions when you get older.
So, you know, our culture has, you know, has certain, well, one term I use, constructs, but there are certain ways our culture has been created. And, you know, I don't have a television, but when I go somewhere and I look at television, I noticed and I observed that right now there are so many commercials that are focused towards the baby boomers and the seniors, you know, whatever age group that may be, you know, where they are talking about, well, we have this pill because you're going to be start getting arthritis, and we have this pill because you're going to have leaky bladder, and we have this medication because it's your eyes that are going to start going, so we can help you there. Of course, then they always have someone who does the class action suits for all the side effects from all the drugs that were just prescribed in the previous commercials. But it's a programming, Thomas, right? We're getting programmed of what's supposed to happen as we move on in our years and what to expect, little realizing we are being programmed rather than having other options of how we can live vital, healthy lives.
Yeah, so you asked, the question I think you, if I remember you asked, was what's the thing in the culture, the one thing in the culture that affects aging? And I think it is this mechanical way of looking at ourselves. Like all the things you're just saying now is treating ourselves as a body breaking apart or falling apart. And that really, if that's your attitude, and if the culture is telling you that's what you are, getting old is a sad thing. I don't see any other way to look at it. I think you have to have an appreciation that you are a human being, that you have emotions, deep emotions. You have a personal history that's very interesting. You have a story to tell about your life. You have people in your life that have been important and are important. You are part of a society that's a living, breathing group of community of people all over the world. All of those things are very meaningful. And I think if you could identify yourself more with those, then you wouldn't have such a negative attitude about getting older, because as you get older, you're more connected. You have a better view of everything that's happening. You're getting bigger in your outlook.
Well, that's really where we need to go. It's this whole paradigm shift about the stages of life. I think our culture is a very ageist culture, and people are programmed to think that their value diminishes, their health diminishes, and we need to change that. You know, we really need to heal that misperception, which is so soul-destroying, actually.
Yes, that's part of what I mean by ageless soul. So I guess I am, when I say ageless, I'm trying to get the word age out of it a little bit or diminish it somewhat. So because there's something about our lives that are timeless, that, you know, that when you think about yourself, look in the mirror and look at yourself, you say, well, I feel like the same person I was 20 years ago. There's something about me and my essence that doesn't change. So in that sense, it might be ageless. And then the world in which I live has a certain eternal quality about it. That's why it's so, I think, so valuable to be in nature and to look at a night sky or to look at mountains and trees and rivers really close, really get a feel for them, because then you get a different sense of time altogether. You move toward what is ageless. And that, in a funny way, mysterious way, makes you a more complete and a more spiritual human being.
You know, I love that term ageless because this is my observation. When whatever age you are, and you know, I am over 50. I'll admit to everybody listening. I won't tell you how much older. But the point is, when you are healthy, you don't have aches and pains. You're not debilitated in some way or other. You feel ageless. I feel ageless. You know, I don't think of myself as a number. I don't have any physical, anything physically that's getting my attention, you know. And when I'm in that place, I do feel ageless. It's so interesting. It's the only way I can define that place. When you really are healthy and vital, it's an ageless place to be in.
Yes, I think so too. When I was doing my doctoral studies in religious studies, I studied Renaissance and Renaissance artists and philosophers. One of them that I studied said, he made this statement, he said that the soul is partly in time and partly in eternity. And I never forgot that, because that's how I would like to see this talk of aging go, that there's a part of life that is clearly affected by time, and we celebrate our birthdays and we feel the effect of time on ourselves in so many different ways. But there's another part altogether that is eternal, and not in the sense of unending so much, that it is outside of time. It's not affected by time. And we can be in that state too. We can be in either state or both at the same time if we want. But I think the culture we live in doesn't understand the eternal. It doesn't get the idea of ageless. All it does is see time. And that's why aging is so difficult to accomplish in this world today.
Yeah. So Thomas, what would you say to people? I mean, I've just come back from a community where my 95-year-old mother is living, and all her friends are in their 90s, okay? Mm-hmm. And, you know, they have their aches and pains. Their partners either have dementia or they've lost their husbands or wives. And it's a, mm-hmm. I mean, they're at the end stage of this life.
Yes.
What would you say to those people? How would you inspire them?
Well, I'm not sure the first thing that I would say would be terribly inspiring, but it helps me, I know. I like to just, at every step of the way, to realize that this is what it means to be a human being. So I'm 77 now. I remember when I was 55, I told my daughter, two nickels, when she asked me how old I was. I said, remember, two nickels. I'm 55, 5'5". And now I'm 7'7". And I mean, the negative side of that is my wish to be younger, to have the agility and so on at that time. But on the other hand, this is what human beings do. They're 50 in their 50s, and then they're in their 70s. That's human life. And I am participating in this life. And it doesn't make any sense to want not to participate, to not let life have its course, play itself out in me. I think that willingness to be a human being is, to me, a very satisfying way of getting older. And I guess what I'm saying is that it's a little bit like a Zen teaching, that you simply be close, you be with whatever is happening to you. You be close to it. You stay close to it. So if I'm with people who are experiencing a lot of illness and dementia and things like that, you know, that is human life. That's what it is. And if I can participate in it and still be optimistic, I've always wanted to be an optimist all my life, I think that's probably the best attitude to have.
Yeah, you know, it's a challenge. You know, I find so many people move into those later years of their life without a strong spiritual foundation or even an experience of looking into themselves and growing, you know, emotionally as well. And so you get to, you don't have to be 90s to have the challenge of really understanding how important it is to have some self-awareness to work with circumstances that are happening in life.
Yes, that's why it's so important that we help young people. I mean, aging begins, you know, when you're, before you become 10, you know. I mean, aging starts so early, and you have to be able at that point to learn to reflect a little bit on the purpose and meaning of life, to be affected and shaped by the arts, because the arts help us a great deal to move away from all that time-dominated life around us. And religion and spiritual practices can be very useful for that as well. So I'm one who's been pretty radical and liberal in my approach to religious issues and spirituality, but I've also been someone to advocate a religious life for everybody, because I don't see how we can age without it. If you don't have a bigger view, a transcendent view of life, if you don't have a practice of some form of meditating, reflecting, contemplating, then you are an object. You're like a machine, and that you're not going to be happy aging that way. But you need to learn this when you're younger. You can't just suddenly learn it. I guess you could, but it'd be better if we could learn it when we're younger. I would like to see us start working at aging when we're talking to young children, and then as they grow up, you know, to constantly be deepening that experience of aging.
Oh, you know, that's great. I like that. I know, I think that being able to have some sort of practice, which you can learn at any age, and maybe that's a really great takeaway for everyone listening to the show, is find a practice, some sort of simple meditation practice. It could be listening to a guided meditation on a regular basis, or reading some inspiring book. But it's some practice that uplifts us. It goes back into that ageless soul place, right, where we can alter for that period of time our perception of who we are and why we're here. It's like takes us back in the moment and not worrying about things. That to me is so important. I have a meditation practice, and I do it religiously every morning. I get up, and that's the first thing I go to. And it took me quite a few years to get to the place where it became a daily ritual and not just an occasional thing. But it's just a part of my day, like brushing my teeth. I wouldn't even consider giving it up. I wouldn't want to. I mean, it's just automatic now.
Yes, that sounds excellent. And what I've thought about this for a long, long time, and my previous book was called A Religion of One's Own, trying to explore this idea of developing one's own spiritual practices. And what I think, I've thought about this for so long, is that part of our spirituality, too, is directly connected to the world in which we live. So I think nature plays a very important role. Now, this is very ancient, this idea that you find your spirituality in the natural world. So if you can contemplate the night sky, that's amazing. You know, the questions that it raises to your mind and the sense of who you are in relationship to it. Or if you just go to the ocean and just walk along the beach and make that, you don't just walk to walk, but walk reflectively and allow yourself to have deep questions come to you. Or if you're with someone, to be able to have a conversation that goes deeper than just the superficial. And doing work, doing a job that really makes a contribution, because service is an important part of the spiritual life. So there are many ways I think we can be in the world and develop these spiritual practices. And they will help us age tremendously, because just as you were saying, you need that bigger outlook, that bigger vision of your own life. Otherwise, it becomes depressing as you get older.
Yeah. Yeah. So you have a really interesting chapter on senior sexuality, and I know that'll get everyone's attention right now. So, what is that chapter about? Tell us about it. What do we need to know about quote unquote senior sexuality?
Yeah.
Whatever a senior may be.
You know, we've been talking about how aging, if you look at it more internally and not just physically, that you get better rather than worse as you get older. Well, I think it's the same sexually. You get better sexually as you get older. I think you are not driven so much, and you are not, you know, driven to have all kinds of experiences. I think you can deepen your experiences. I think you might come to the point where you realize how valuable it is to have a partner that you can be close to in all your days and all day long, and show that affection and that love in some way, you know, physically. And it doesn't have to be perfect and wonderful, maybe the way it was in your 20s. But it's deeper. It's deeper, and I think you are, as a person, are more present. The other thing about it, too, is that I agree with Freud, who said that sexuality really is the furnace that generates the heat and passion and sensuality of your whole life. So as you get older, what you can do is you can let that sexuality, those feelings, your sexual feelings, get bigger and seep into the whole of life, and so that you can eat better, and you can surround yourself with beauty, and you can go and go to an art gallery or something in a way you haven't gone before, and you can feel that your sexuality is part of it, because there's the combination of pleasure and desire and beauty that are so much part of sexuality are present in the world as you go. And I don't see that as sublimating sexuality. I see it as extending it and broadening and deepening what your sexuality is. It's like a natural expansion of who you are sexually.
It's like keeping that passion alive for life.
Yes, the passion for life alive. As a therapist, I focus most of my attention on dreams. When people have dreams of sex, which is fairly common, it seems to me our conversation always comes to a passion for life. It's not just about some very narrow definition of sex. It's about the passion for life and loving the world you're in and being there physically and emotionally and with your whole self. That's how your sexuality is ultimately fully expressed.
Yeah, that's so interesting. That's so interesting to use it as a metaphor for that, you know, the energies, instead of thinking it is like genitally based, it's really a metaphor for that passion of life.
Well, I probably wouldn't say metaphor, because I think it really is part of our sexuality. You know, it's like... Whatever sexual feelings you might have, you think about that, your sexuality, how as you were maybe younger, trying to sort them all out and trying to work it out with your partner and having problems here and there, always trying to, you know, get it right. Then as you get older, I think what happens is that sexuality, the thing that was a part of your life so intensely, it seeps into the world in which you live. And it seeps into everything you're doing. That same emotion, that same passion, that same part of yourself is now sort of entering into the world in which you live, so that you can enjoy it and realize how important that is in you. And it's related to your erotic feelings and fantasies and everything as well. We know that older people don't lose their eroticism. But now it can go into life more and be fulfilled.
I think it's really important to have these conversations, don't you? I mean, the older you get, and I mean, senior is such a strange word. I mean, you know, I mean, I'm on Medicare, you know, but I, you know what I mean? It's like, I don't feel like I'm a senior. So, you know, it's like, what age group is a senior? But anyway,
that's
another question, you know. I mean, what do you feel like at 77? What's does that feel different for you than what you've been at 76 or 75 or 74 or 70?
Well, there are some differences physically. That's the main thing, you know. There's some things diminish a bit, you know, a few more symptoms appear here and there. But that's just living, that's just life. And some people get those in their 20s and 30s. I mean, you know, it's just part of life. But I don't feel that. No, I feel more the ageless person. I really do. But I said before, I get that from probably from my father. I saw my father who died at 100. I saw him in his 90s as quite a young man. I mean, he had a job. He drove his car. He had an avocation as well. He collected stamps. He worked at a hospital. He was really, I mean, he was in his 90s, but it didn't look like 90s. Didn't have any 90s I've ever seen. So I think that has affected me, that I don't worry so much about the numbers. I just go ahead and live my life. And if there are some tweaks that I need, and a few things here and there are falling apart, so what? You know, it happens to everybody.
Well, that is really living gracefully, isn't it? I would define that as living gracefully. It's like embracing what is and enjoying how it is.
People have asked me the secret of my father's longevity. If I told them about his diet, they're not impressed because he loved to eat coffee cake every night and apple pies and things like that. And I mean, he had an awful, terrible diet. And he was healthy right till the very end, you know, at 100. But he loved life and he loved people.
Yeah.
He had a great respect for people, especially older people. And younger people, too. He was always having younger people under his wing, trying to help them out, get through their lives. I think that's why he lived to be 100 in such good shape.
I actually think that attitude is a much more powerful indicator for keeping the body healthy than worrying about all the foods we eat, to be honest, because the mind and the heart are so powerful.
Yes, I think so too. That's why I keep saying we are people with souls. We're not objects. We're not machines that need a certain kind of diet all the time to get along. If we are souls and the soul affects the body, I mean, our inner life affects our physical life, obviously, stress and all that kind of thing, or joy can affect it, then maybe what we should be focusing on is not what we eat so much. I mean, you can do that, but maybe not as much as finding joy in life and having good relationships and opening your heart and helping people out.
Well, that's just kind of common sense, isn't it? I mean, if you want to live a life that is going to bring you pleasure and joy, it has to come back to that. It has to come back to connecting again with others and supporting and serving. It's just innate within us, within our soul. It's innate within our soul.
Yeah. And what's curious about that is that the more you give out, the more you open your heart and you give out of yourself, the more yourself is improved or it's better off. Funny, you know, it's not about focusing so much on yourself and making sure it's great and in terrific shape. It's more about reaching out to the world around you and making sure that other people are okay. I think that's what makes you a person who is very much alive and can age well, and you're happy and fulfilled as you get older.
So, in the last few minutes that we have, Thomas, I find this conversation really inspiring. I love talking this talk. But for people who are not happy, for people who are sick, for people who are depressed, for people who are feeling lonely or feeling like they're losing their physical capacities, whether it's memory or energy, what... And that can be a young person, by the way. You know, he can be a very old young person, right?
Yes.
What would be some of your top, you know, recommendations or, you know, things to support them, inspire them? What would be some of the things that you can offer people who are in those places?
The first thing I would suggest is you have to go against your society a bit. You can't be fully absorbed. You can't be shaped by the world in which you live. We don't live in a very soulful world. Our world has trouble, you know, and it hasn't learned how to treat people well yet, as is culture. I mean, there are a lot of great people, but as a culture, we're not treating each other very well. So I think the first step is you have to say, I'm not going to participate 100%. I'm going to withdraw a little bit from that world. I'm going to be different. I'm going to live my own way. That's the first step. And as you get older, you can do that. You can say, okay, this is time for me to resist this culture I'm in. I'm going to be odd. I'm going to be the odd one out. I'm going to be eccentric in order not to be so affected by this culture that hasn't got it together yet. So that's step one. And I think the other one is what we've been talking about primarily is don't treat yourself as an object ever. Don't let yourself be treated as an object. A lot of older people say that people in the world just look right past you. They don't give you the time of day. Because you're old, they don't pay any attention, that you can't be interesting, you can't be worthwhile. So you have to stand out. You have to be able to reach out and say, this is who I am. And do it loud and clear, and continue to be creative and productive in your own way. If you're finding yourself, you know, like your memory is going, that happens. You know, it happens with people. Your soul still remains. Your soul doesn't need your memory. You know, you can still be a person even as your memory goes. You can still be the human being. So just be. Just be there if that's what it takes.
Well, those are some great thoughts. What are you looking forward to? You know, you've just written this book, and another great project you've completed.
Yeah.
What's your forecast for yourself? What do you see?
I always look for the next book. I'm working on my next one.
What's that one?
It's going to be on it's called The Psychotherapist in You. Oh, everybody can be a therapist. I've been a therapist for 40 years. And I think we can help each other. And I want to write about specifically how we can help each other without making a lot of mistakes, without making things worse.
Oh, I love that. I look forward to your book and our next conversation.
That would be great.
We'll have you booked. You know? So I want people to please go to Thomas More's website, which I believe it's thomasmoresoul.com. Is that the best one? Okay,
yes,
so it's
right.
thomasmoresoul.com. And... pick up the copy of his latest book, Ageless Soul, the Lifelong Journey Toward Meaning and Joy, and gain the wisdom that that Thomas is sharing in his book, because this conversation has been filled with wisdom, and I have to tell you, it's been such a pleasure having this conversation with you. It's been great. You've inspired me, and I know you've been inspiring lots of people along the way, which is part of your job here.
Part of my job. I mean, I enjoy it too, Cheryl, because you have terrific ideas and can have a conversation at this level. It's terrific.
Yeah, it really is. So it's always a special thing when that happens. And I'm sure everyone listening has really enjoyed this conversation as well. So I just want to thank you, Thomas Moore, for being with us on the show today. And again, everyone visit his website, thomasmooresoul.com. Pick up his fantastic new book, Ageless Soul, The Lifelong Journey Toward Meaning and Joy. And I wish you all the best, and may you get younger and happier and more creative with every breath, Thomas.
Thank you. And the same to you.
Thank you. Maybe that's the new way we have to greet each other these days. So to all of my listeners, thank you for joining me today for another opportunity to continue to get empowered with truthful information and learn and grow and heal and get younger and honor your ageless soul. So until next time, as always, I just want to remind you to honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.